Where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby Dooby Doo, where are you? We need some help from you now.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of FW Presents, the anthology show of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. For this episode, I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag. Along with me is my co-host, Mr. Rob Riley. How you doing, sir?
Well, that was pretty well done. Good job, Shag.
It was only about 3 hours solid practice in having an audience of my family to judge and critique me, but thanks.
Those poor people.
You could have just implied that for the entire marriage and life of my daughter. But anyway, so we are here to do a little bit of Scooby-Doo. So this is very exciting. This is a topic we've only talked – I think you and I have only talked about it once before when there was the Batman Brave and the Bold Scooby-Doo movie.
Yes, so, which I just watched a couple of weeks ago again.
Oh, that's fantastic. I listened back to our episode to see what we said because I couldn't remember. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. For those of you at home who don't realize it, my name's Shag. As shocking as this may be, it's not what's on my birth certificate. We don't talk about that. Bartholomew. But anyway, Shag was a nickname given to me, and it came literally from Scooby-Doo. So give you a little idea. So do you know the history of the Scooby-Doo cartoon, how it got started, where it's based on?
No, I mean, not well. All right, no.
It's a ripoff. Scooby-Doo is essentially a ripoff. What they did was there was a very popular cartoon called the Archies, you know, which was based on Archie and all that stuff. And they wanted a competing product. And after a few different permutations, they finally decided to rip off a TV show called The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis. And they said, let's make a cartoon basically like that. And so they did that, and that's where you get – if you've ever seen the show, it used to be in reruns when you and I were a kid. No, Robin, I did not see it first run. Thank you, people. Anyway, this is an old black and white sitcom. Anyway, the main guy, Dobie, is basically Fred. One of his girlfriends is Daphne. Thelma is Velma. Maynard G. Krebs, who was played by Bob Denver.
Bob Denver, right? Sure. Yeah. Gilligan, yeah.
Yep. He played the Beatnik, who's based on Shaggy. And so they developed this cartoon, and they gave him a dog. And then they went through a few more permutations to make him like a mystery investigator. And then as it evolved, the dog became more the central focus. But basically, Scooby-Doo is a ripoff of Dobie Gillis. So in high school, I was very, very skinny. Gosh, I wish I was that skinny. I had long, luxurious hair, and I couldn't grow a beard to save my life. So here I was, this skinny guy with a big nose and long hair and little tiny chin hairs. And this girl I'd known since, like, I don't know, elementary school, I think. And I'm in 10th grade. She looks at me, and she goes – and by the way, her name was Kelly because, you know, everything in my life apparently has revolved around people named Kelly, I guess. Anyway, she looks at me and she says, oh, I just figured it out. You look like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. I'm like, what? And suddenly it stuck. She started calling me that. A few more people started calling me that. I decided I liked it. So the first day of 11th grade, the teacher says, you know, they call the roll and they say, what do you want to be called? You know, in your case, it was, you know, they'd say Robert Kelly. And you said, I'd like to be Richie Rich Robbie, please. You know, or whatever. They said, what do I want to be called? And I said, I'd like to be called Shag, which got hysterical laughter from everyone. They all made fun of me for about a week. And then a week later, my name was Shag, and it always has been since. So it all came from Scooby-Doo. And in fact, in high school, yeah. Okay, I don't know if you did this when you were in high school. Did you ever lie about your name to people just because to do it, like make up a fake alias or something like that?
No, no one ever talked to me enough for me to lie to anybody.
Well, anyway, two of the aliases I used to use growing up was Maynard G. Krebs, because Shaggy was based on him from Dobie Gillis, so I thought that'd be fun. And I also used the alias of Norville Rogers, although no one was ever named Norville, so that didn't really fly. But if you don't know, that's Shaggy's real name, is Norville Rogers.
Where did that get entered into it? That certainly never showed up on the show, right? Probably late, like recently, that's an addition to the canon?
The first time I ever heard it, and I believe it was when it was introduced, was in the pup named Scooby-Doo cartoon in the 1980s.
No.
You say that, and I initially would have thought the same thing. But that cartoon – and Michael Bailey, back me up here. That cartoon was damn fun, and it was very self-referential, and it was hilarious. So I will go to bat for the pup named Scooby-Doo. It's a riot.
All right. I just want to say, I mean, you know I love Mike, but saying that Mike Bailey says it's good doesn't always necessarily mean
That's fair. That's fair.
That's not the end-all, be-all of endorsements. That's all I'm saying.
The defense rests. Michael Bailey likes it. The impetus that has led us to do this is two things. One is they just recently released the Scoob movie, which I Rob and I haven't seen it yet, but I know I'm really excited to watch it. I just need to make the time to get out there and buy it and watch it. Looks super fun. And because of that, DC Comics, in an effort to promote it, have done something amazing that you people should be taking advantage of. They have released more than 250 Scooby-Doo comic books, released them digitally, absolutely free. You can get them on Comixology, ReadDC.com, Amazon Kindle, Apple Books, all kinds of places. So you can get more than 250 issues of Scooby-Doo comics for free. Includes the regular Scooby-Doo comic book, the Scooby-Doo Team-Up, which is what we're going to be talking about today, and Scooby-Doo Where Are You? And this is all available through September 7th. So even if you're late-ass dragging your butt to listen to this episode, you might still have time to download it by September 7th. So get out there and check that out.
That's an incredible deal that they're all for free. I just went on an pardon this word, orgy of clicking on comics out.
I downloaded 100 issues of free Scooby-Doo in a matter of minutes the other day.
Yep.
So. Well, speaking of Scooby-Doo comics, why don't we thank our sponsors, because this is sort of related. Folks, this episode of FW Presents is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Now, what did you bring? Rob Reilly!
Okay, all right. I did Scooby-Doo Team-Up Trade Paperback Volume 5, which collects one of the issues or two of the issues. We'll get into the weird numbering of the series. Collects one or two of the issues I'll be talking about tonight. It collects Scooby-Doo Team-Up numbers 25 through 30, where they meet characters like Aquaman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Plastic Man, hey, Max, Hong Kong Phooey, and more. It's written by Sholly Fish, as all these issues were, and drawn by Dario Brizuela, as all these issues were. The normal price is only $12.99, but in-stock trades price is $7.53. That is 42% off. So you get five whole issues of Scooby-Doo Team-Up for $7.53. I think like regular comics are like $4 now, so that's an incredible deal.
And these comics are so full of joy, guys. I mean, oh my gosh. If you don't know, I guess we should explain. The Scooby-Doo Team-Up premise is each issue, Scooby-Doo and the gang are teamed up with somebody either from DC Comics or from Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Mostly people from DC Comics, and they are just absolutely a hoot. My pick was the same damn issue, by the way, thanks. So I went ahead and picked another one. So I picked Scooby-Doo Team-Up Doomed trade paperback. They stopped dropping, including the volume numbers at this point. But this one includes, from the print run of Scooby-Doo Team-Up, the hard copy run, it includes issues 37 through 42. You get team-ups with the Justice Society. Oh yeah, I said that. Swamp Thing, Supergirl, a Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt, Penelope Pitstop, and then there's this great all-gorilla issue where they team up with Kong-Gorilla, Sam Simeon, and Detective Chimp, and they battle Gorilla Grodd, the Ultra-Humanite, and Monsignor Mala, which is just freaking hilarious. And same pricing that Rob just brought up. It's normally $12.99. You get it for $7.53. Same creative team. It's such a hell of a great deal. So go out and download all those free ones, and then go buy some from InStock Trades, folks. So go out there. InStock Trades, your best source for trades and hardcovers. Also, this episode is sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And for the past several years, you know, we've sort of absorbed this cost. But as they've grown, you guys really stepped up with the Patreon to help us out. I can't tell you. I mean, Fire and Water Podcast Network still exists because of you guys. Seriously, I absolutely mean that. The hosting has gotten so expensive, we couldn't do it without your help. So thank you so much. And if you enjoy shows like this, the best way of supporting us is by visiting the Patreon. What's that, Rob?
Patreon.com/FW Podcast.
Very good. It's almost like you practiced that.
Thank you.
Anyway, go out to the site, folks, and consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And at certain sponsorship tiers, you get mentioned on your favorite Fire and Water shows, just like these folks. Our thanks go out to David A's Goodyears and Gordon Tolton. Again, just visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcasts. Now, we are going to cover four, best way to describe it is stories, I guess.
Yeah.
And we'll explain that. From Scooby-Doo Team-Up, we picked a couple ones for obvious reasons, and then other ones we just tried out, and they're freaking amazing. But I will tell you, there's 100 issues of digitally or 50 issues in print, and you're not going to find a bad one out there. So why don't you kick us off, Rob?
Yeah, the first one I'm going to be talking about is Scooby-Doo Team-Up hard copy number 14, but digitally 27 and 28. They really should have done like AB or something. It would have been a lot easier to figure out. But anyway, this team-up is the Scooby Gang meets Aquaman. I can imagine why I would have picked that one. The story is called Wet and Wild. It's, as we mentioned, by Sholly Fish, pencils by Dario Brizuela, and inks by Franco Risco. So the Scooby Gang is on a nice, relaxing vacation cruise. So far from land, what kind of trouble could possibly find them here? Of course, the answer is a lot, because all of a sudden some sea creatures jump out of the water and climb the ship. Strangely enough, these sea creatures want the passengers' money and jewelry, which Daphne promptly refuses to hand over. Shortly after that, Poseidon himself emerges from the sea. Luckily for the gang, they're not alone. Aquaman is here. Aquaman hurls his trident at Poseidon, only for him to disappear. The sea creatures suddenly make a break for it, diving back into the water. Velma unmasks one of them, because of course she does, revealing these scaly beasts to be just normal crooks. Aquaman chases them into the water, has Topo the octopus and his pals grab them. There's one still loose, but he is stopped by Mira. Fred finds a hologram projector laying on the sea floor, revealing where Poseidon came from. Shaggy assumes the case is solved, but Velma realizes that if all six crooks on the ship are now in custody, who is running the projector? Aquaman asks some witnesses, a.k.a. some finny friends. They start on the trail only to be attacked by those creepy manta men. That can only mean one thing. The dastardly denizen of the deep is near, Black Manta. So now we have part two, and I'm going to do my best Ted Knight voice here. When last we left Aquaman, he and Mira were shocked to learn their son, Arthur Jr., was in the hands of the villainous Black Manta. So I'm going to
stop. That was pretty good.
Thank you. I'm going to stop doing it now. Aquaman is afraid to attack Black Manta, lest his son be harmed. Manta uses the eye beams in his helmet to make the heroes scatter, but he's not prepared for the reaction of Arthur Jr., who uses his water powers to knock Manta out. While Manta has been apprehended, he is defiant to the end. He even goes so far as to brag that this was the plan all along. What plan? To distract Aquaman, keep him away from Atlantis. Why? Because that leaves it defenseless against the onslaught of Ocean Master. Atlantis manages to defend itself with the help of younger heroes Aqualad and Aquagirl. This delays Ocean Master long enough for Aquaman, Mira, and the Scooby Gang to arrive, with the Sea King calling in a small army of his finny friends. Aquaman is about to lay out Orm, but is halted by Mira, who insists on the honor. She belts Ocean Master, and soon after, Aquaman is hosting a royal dinner for his surface-dwelling pals. Scooby runs away after being scared by a piranha. Shaggy decides all this delicious-looking food is for naught because he can't eat with his scuba gear on.
I love this thing, dude. It was a hoot. I love, there's a lot of jokes that are, you know, character specific. Then there's a lot of just funny, you know, bits that are referential to the Scooby Gang. Like, I'll do the Scooby ones first, because obviously we're going to talk about the Aquaman stuff. But, like, I love Fred. They're on the ship, and the monsters show up. And the captain's like, oh my gosh, because he had just said there's no sign of trouble. And Fred says, no, the monsters always show up after someone says there's no trouble here, which I think is great. I like the bit where Fred just keeps trying to pull people's masks off, because that's what Fred always does. But they're underwater, and everyone has to stop him because he's going to drown people if he does that. Just that stuff cracked me up. Again, the rest of my notes are Aquaman specific. Now, as someone who, as I understand, has a passing interest in the King of the Seven Seas, how'd you feel about this one?
Oh, I thought this was really fun, because obviously one of the reasons we love this series is that Sholly Fish, being an uber comic book nerd, it sticks in all these bells and whistles, all these little Easter eggs for hardcore DC fans. But he also obviously in the book is meant for kids, and it's a great kids comic, which we need more of. But the other thing I like about it is that to me it feels like if Hanna-Barbera and Filmation had teamed up to do an Aquaman Scooby-Doo cartoon. I mean, it really feels sort of seamless. The way that he works Aquaman and the gang into it, it doesn't feel like one set of characters is invading another set of characters' universe. It feels very blended together. So I could sort of picture that all together. I do love Black Manta. And I feel like Black Manta has like four plays against Aquaman. That's it. He's like a handbook. And one of them is kidnap the kid. That's always one of his plans. It's always that.
That was like the worst cliffhanger for me. I got there and Black Manta is holding the whole – that's the – cliffhanger. Black Manta is holding Aquababy, and those of us who are Aquaman fans, we just know what that means. And it's like, oh God, no, not in a kids comic.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, even here, like I said, it's he manages to fit in all the fun stuff. Oh, by the way, I should mention, I did art wise, the costume that Mira is wearing is her costume basically from the Filmation show.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
She's got the yellow boots and stuff. I mean, she had boots in the Filmation cartoon. So, I mean, even there, they're sort of tipping their hat to the connected animation world of these characters. And the Manta Men look like the Manta Men from the Filmation cartoon.
Oh, I know! that was awesome. Yeah. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw the Manta Man. Also, Aquaman's wearing, well, they're not exactly black trunks. They're like dark green, but it's basically the black trunks.
Yeah, so there's a similar look, and Manta looks like what he does in Filmation. So I said, it's like you could see this just being animated, and it's just delightful. It's just really, really fun. It's a little harder, I'd say, probably for some of the other team-ups to work in the Scooby Gang. But you just put them on vacation out on the seven seas, and there you go. You're good. But no, I thought this was just utterly delightful and really, really charming.
There's some good bits. Like, I love the mermen when they jump in the water and they're chastising each other after they jump in the water. They're like, why did we jump back in the water? This is where Aquaman is. What were we doing? So that's some funny bits. One of my notes is, of course the bad guys are Black Man and Ocean Master, because Aquaman has no other villains. Yeah. But
well, if you're Shelly Fish, though, you absolutely would have brought, you know, could have brought in the Fisherman or the Terrible Trio, because he knows that stuff that deeply.
Okay, I got one more comment, and then you're going to have to talk to me about Shelly Fish, because I don't know a lot about him. So, all right. My last comment is the funniest thing in the book to me was Fred. Something like a huge deal has happened, and Fred's down underwater with Daphne and Mara and all them. And Fred says, outrageous! And Mara says, please don't do that, which that cracked me. It's so subtle. If you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't get it, but that was great. So, all right, talk to me about Shelly Fish. I mean, he's obvious. I don't know that I've ever read anything by him other than this, and I love these things.
He's written a lot of kids' comics. Again, he wrote every issue of this thing. He also wrote for the Scooby-Doo comic book as well, okay. Just the regular comic book. And I actually interviewed him for Treasury Cast. If you want to go back into our archives, go to Treasury Cast number 15, and I interviewed him where he talked about his favorite Treasury of all time, which is Marvel Treasury Edition number 1, the Spider-Man Treasury. So he's always been a very kind to me about answering questions here and there about different things, and so he focuses heavily on education, like writing stuff involving kids being educated. So he focuses on young adult stuff or kids, you know, kids comics and stuff like that. But he does it so well because, like I said, he throws in all these little details for, you know, the long term comic. I mean, Volko is in this thing, for Pete's sake.
Oh yeah,
you know,
Volko, I mean, so. Tula, Tusky, Garth. It's full of it, and it gets deeper the more issues we cover in a minute.
Man, when we get to the later one that I'm going to do, whoa, it's even deeper. But yeah, it's it. And then the artwork, I didn't really mention the artwork much at all. The Dario Bruziella, I love. It's again, it's very kid friendly. All the characters kind of look like almost like Playmobil figures. Like, they're real thick, kind of like Aquaman is like super beefy and stuff, and Ocean Master has these kind of goofy goggles. But it's very brightly colored, as you might imagine, and it's just very upbeat and cheery, and it looks kind of like a children's book, which of course it's sort of supposed to be. But you know, overall, it's just a really solid package, and this is, you know, we always talk about all these companies buying up properties and where it's, you know, all the entertainment is going to be owned by like three companies. And that has some downsides, obviously. But it's like, to me, if you're going to mesh properties, if you do it as well as Scooby-Doo Team-Up, then, you know, no complaints. You know, this is exactly what you'd want by having one company own all these characters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as far as so thank you, by the way, for the education on Shelly. I love this stuff. So I'm going to have to go. I know I would have listened to that Treasure Cast, but I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to it now. But one of the formats, too, that makes this so kid-friendly is these did come out digitally first. And the way they do it is the full page is not actually like the normal dimensions of a comic book. It's like the bottom half of your – just one half of the page. So it's wide, and you get a nice big wide shot. So when they print it, they just take two of the – digital pages and stack them on top of each other is how they do it. But it works really well in a nice digital format. And it's I think it was pretty smart of DC to publish it this way. You know, they do the digital first and then later come back and publish it as a hard copy. So it was a neat way to do that. Now, you mentioned the artwork. Yeah, the art's great. And he does a nice job of – not only is he having to design the superheroes in this sort of style and draw the action with the Scooby Gang, he's having to follow – the Scooby guidelines, you know, and one thing I noticed as I started to look at a lot of the covers, because, you know, when you buy all these things, you see them all in your library, right? And you start to notice, oh, there's a lot of stock poses that the artist is being probably told to use because they're pretty established, you know, Hanna-Barbera characters. Like, there's this particular pose of Scooby running that's repeated on, like, I don't know, 10 of the covers. Like, you notice, oh, the feet are in exactly the same position. And Daphne always stands with her hands on her hip and, you know, with her hip cocked, which, God bless her.
Her and Mira in one book together.
I know, right? So, anyway, so he does a great job of that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is keeping with the style guide and rolling in all the DC stuff is just phenomenal. Well, why don't we get on to the next issue?
All right, you go right ahead.
All right, so this is the Halloween issue. It was digitally issues 25 and 26, but if you got a hard copy, it's issue 13. It features the Spectre, Deadman, and Phantom Stranger. So here's the recap. On Halloween, the Phantom Stranger and Deadman arrive asking for help from the kids of Mystery Inc. Turns out ghosts have been disappearing around the world, including the – here's some deep cuts, folks – the Grim Ghost, the Ghost Patrol, Kid Attorney and Mr. Keeper, Captain Triumph, and Gentleman Ghost. The ghost went missing from all corners of the planet, and but those meddling kids figure out that the center of all the disappearances is a town called Silver Spur, Nevada. Phantom Stranger teleports them all to the ghost town, and they all find missing ghosts imprisoned in a cage forged of what's called ghost bars. Velma figures out that the real culprit is hiding in plain sight in the jail cell. She notices that one of the imprisoned folks is the Spook, who's a character from the comics, but the Spook is not actually a real ghost. So Phantom Stranger, they reveal that the Spook is actually in disguise a character called Tanarak, who's an ancient alchemist and an old nemesis of the Phantom Stranger. That's a deep cut, too, folks.
That is a deep cut.
Yes, and it turns out it's a trap. Tanarak replaces himself with the Phantom Stranger because Tanarak wants to live forever without dying, which he believes is possible by capturing ghosts, and he reveals he's even captured the Spectre. Now, while battling Tanarak, Daphne allows Deadman to possess her body. Lucky guy. And then this distraction allows the Spectre to possess Scooby. So the Spectre and Scooby hybrid, I guess you will, they free all the ghosts, and as Tanarak tries to escape, the ghosts take their revenge and capture Tanarak. And in the end, the Spectre returns to his body, the ghosts escape, and Tanarak is imprisoned. So that's the high level. But man, this thing was hilarious. I'll turn it over to you in just a second. Just in regard to all those deep cuts, again, Grim Ghost, you know, formerly known as the Giga Ghost. The Ghost Patrol, I mean, dude, other than who's who, seriously, where have they appeared? Kid Attorney and Mr. Keeper, Captain Triumph. One of the ghosts that doesn't get name checked, I don't know if you noticed, but it's in there, is the ghost from Haunted Tank. He's in there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So, all right, so what do you think of this one, man?
Well, this one is probably the closest to what I could see as a regular episode of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Because it's all the ghost character.
Okay.
Of course, obviously, in the Phantom Stranger and Tanarak really are supernatural characters, and that didn't happen in the Scooby-Doo universe. But nevertheless, I could see them being drawn in that particular kind of Hanna-Barbera style of the first season of Scooby-Doo. And boy, yeah, talk about deep cuts. Tanarak. I mean, again, Charlie Fish just knows all this stuff backwards and forwards. And so just – I never thought in my wildest dreams that you would have Tanarak in a kid's comic. Like, that's just insane.
Well, Captain Triumph, I would say, is equally as a deep cut.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, just wow. Just crazy. Now, there's a couple of great bits. Of course you picked up on this. You ran a Phantom Stranger blog. But the Phantom Stranger introduces the story, which is great.
Yes, yep.
So that's great. I like when – because Deadman possesses a lot of people throughout the story because, you know, that's how he communicates. At one point, he possesses Shaggy. And I like as a test to prove it's not really Shaggy, they ask him, do you want a sandwich? And he's like, no. They're like, oh, it's not Shaggy. And then and probably my – besides all the deep cuts, my favorite bit is when Scooby gets possessed by the Spectre. First of all, he looks badass as the Spectre with the hooded eyes and his snout sticking out. But he yells, Rengeance! Which is a vengeance, but with an R, which was hilarious.
Scooby's gonna like send one of the crooks through a turn him into wood and send him to a buzzsaw.
Absolutely. So I don't have a lot of other notes other than this was, again, the art is fantastic. It's super fun. It looks beautiful. I love seeing all these deep cut ghost characters. Especially like the Haunted Tank one. I want to say it's Jeb Stuart, but I think that's the guy who actually is the
guy driving the tank.
Yeah. But it's like his great-great-grandfather or whatever. But either way.
You could picture a Hanna-Barbera series starring these characters, the DC mystery characters, with that same music. The you know, that kind of thing. It's totally – yeah, I just love it. I love the detail of Dario Bruziella on Halloween part, like the balloons have skulls on them. I just think that's a nice little there's skulls all over the place. I just think that's really cool. And again, like Shaggy being possessed by Deadman, it's funny, you know, it's just like, it's great. And the Gentleman Ghost, of course, did appear in animation. He appeared in that Super Friends episode. And I think
Chris
and Cindy even covered it over on House of Frankenstein one time. So, I mean, he has even more of a Hanna-Barbera crossover than the other character.
Oh, the possession with Daphne. She's doing all the acrobatics as a dead man, which makes perfect sense. Just so much fun. Just absolutely love this thing.
Yeah.
So good. All right. Why don't we go on to the next one?
All right. Well, the next one is, like I said, my second choice, and it's from issues, well, the hard copy, again, number 24. The digital comics are 47, 48. And this story is Out of This World. Features the covers. You see Shaggy and Scooby with the Martian Manhunter. The Scooby gang is in the middle of wrapping up a mystery, and it ends with Shaggy decking the crook, a very un-Shaggy-like thing to do. Then the gang sees that there are two Shaggies, one hiding behind a display case, the other being the Martian Manhunter. Manhunter tells the gang he needs their help, but has to turn invisible when a pair of would-be alien cops called the Persons in Plaid show up to question him. Thanks to a telepathic message, Daphne knows to meet the Martian Manhunter at a secret location. Manhunter explains that the world governments are trying to round up all the known alien beings thanks to a message from Martian Manhunter on TV saying that it is time for them to seize control of the planet. Manhunter introduces the gang to the aliens not yet apprehended, Starfire, Gem Son of Saturn, woo-hoo! Starman 2, and, wait for it, Ultra the Multi-Alien.
That was a, just, you know, this moment right here. This is what it's all been leading to, folks.
Basically, this is why I wanted to do it, yeah.
This is how I convinced Rob to do this episode.
You didn't have to convince me. I was on board with this. Anyway, another TV broadcast from the fake Martian Manhunter starts, and Velma notices something strange. Before she can mention it, though, the Persons in Plaid arrive looking to arrest everyone. Manhunter puts them to sleep telepathically. Velma then mentions that she noticed that on the Martian, that the Martian Manhunter on television was wearing a pendant, something the real one never wears, and then in the background they could make out a very unique-looking building. By finding that building, they can locate where the broadcasts are coming from. Martian Manhunter and the Scooby Gang apprehend the phony Martian Manhunter, who is actually his old foe, Professor Hugo, in disguise. Not Hugo Strange, just Professor Hugo,
right,
in disguise.
Right. Only Diablo Frank knows who that is.
Exactly. Then the Persons arrive and point out that the TV cameras were still rolling, revealing Hugo's plan to the world, causing all the aliens in custody to be released. Fred then pulls off their glasses, and the two alien hunters are actually aliens themselves. Turns out they weren't there to arrest anyone, but simply gather info surreptitiously to help everyone figure out what was going on. Manhunter thanks the gang for their help, and Fred says it was no problem. The Jones boys have to stick together.
That was a great ending joke. Yes. I love that bit. Yeah. I didn't see that coming.
Cue the credits.
Right.
Yeah, no, this, I look, obviously I love this one because it's got Ultra the Multi-Alien in it. Again, another ridiculous deep cut, and by the fact that Ultra is in it as much as that's one of his – one of his most sustained appearances in the last 20 years or so, really. So, I mean, Gem Son of Saturn, again, and Professor Hugo, I had to look this guy up. I had no idea who this guy was. He first appeared in Detective Comics number 306. He was actually a Batman villain, and then I guess the editors at the time realized, ah, we have enough good villains, we don't need to waste him on Batman, and they shoved him to the backup feature where he fought Martian Manhunter for only 5 appearances, which is why I guess he never got a who's who listing because, you know, I guess they didn't consider 5 appearances worthy enough. Funny enough, if you look up Professor Hugo on Google, you will see someone made a custom who's who page for him. Not our dear departed Zoom Yukinori, but somebody else. So the page does exist out there.
That's because we covered it, Rob.
We did.
Yeah, it's Frank's. Remember when Frank put together the –
Oh, that's right. Oh,
the Martian Manhunter who's who issue. Yeah. This leads into my story. Is the only reason I know Hugo, Professor Hugo, is because when I went to get Frank's house, yes, I had been into the den of Diablo, folks. He strapped me to a chair and did all like Clockwork Orange on my eyes and made me keep them open. And he showed me all the sketches he had commissioned of various Martian Manhunter characters.
Now
and this included Professor Hugo, which he then turned into a Who's Who entry, which we covered. So you may have been in on our own website when you saw that, sir. But anyway.
No, it was actually on it was on Pinterest.
Somebody had it up on
Pinterest, yeah.
Well, the other deep cut in this one, too, was Zook, Martian Manhunter's sidekick.
Oh, man, yeah.
I couldn't believe it when they said all the aliens that have been rounded up, they included Zook. I hope Frank's read this thing. If he hasn't, oh, my gosh, he doesn't know what he's missing. My favorite bit in the whole issue, and I'm actually going to read this because it just cracked me up so hard, was when Fred is meeting all the aliens and he gets to meet Starman, or you call him Starman, too, the blue one. He's like, hey, I thought Starman was a young hipster guy. That's the other Starman. You're his father? That's the other Starman. An Earthling with a mullet? The other Starman. An alien prince? The other Starman. I laugh so freaking hard at that. And they do something similar with Starfire, where she talks about our beloved Starfire, the warrior princess comic, and then, of course, Red Star from Teen Titans and all that, which cracked me up. Ultra gets to use his magnetic hand. I assume you saw that, sir.
Yes. Yep.
And that's another thing that cracked me up. It opens – in media res. They're, as Rob described, they're solving a mystery, and they're like right at the end of it. It opens with Velma going, well, after reviewing the ballistics evidence, last weekend's football scores, and your third grade report cards, the ghost of Sir Hauntsalot must really be... You know, just, that was just, I mean, just, this guy, he's all over the dialogue and the tropes. It's just absolutely a hoot.
Yeah, he blends these worlds together really seamlessly. And again, if I, you know, if this comic had been out when I was like a wee lad, I mean, man, this would have been such a great introduction to all of these characters that I wasn't familiar with, because I wouldn't have heard of Ken. It was like, you know, Zook, really? Like, who's that? You know, like, would have been amazing. By the way, back in the 60s and the 50s, you were not a major, in DC's eyes, you were not a major character if you didn't get like a funny sidekick.
That's
like,
true.
You could tell you were a marquee character. Green Lantern had one, Aquaman had one, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman all had one. But that they even went as far as Martian Manhunter, I think said a lot about him, what they thought of that character's potential.
I knew that I finally had really made it when I got a goofy sidekick.
So wait. You want to do the next issue?
Wait for it. Oh, he got it. He understood. Okay, good. All right, so this next one, for me, I will give a quick shout out. I've read a lot of these things. I haven't read them all, but I've read a lot. The Justice Society one is really, really good. They actually go back to the 1940s, and they split up into teams just like they would in the Justice Society. It's awesome. But for me, this next one we're about to cover is the crowning achievement for me personally. This is actually the first Scooby-Doo team-up comic I ever read, and I still hold it out as what I think is probably the funniest one. So Green Lantern, Green Arrow. I'm sorry. It's issue 49 and 50 digitally, or hard copy number 25. And the guests are Green Lantern and Green Arrow. Yeah, that's right, folks. All right, here we go. The Mystery Inc. gang are called to help in a town called Karma Corners, which is a town of aging hipsters who dropped out of society 50 years ago. Now these geriatric tree huggers are being haunted by the ghosts of their own straight-laced parents, trying to guilt them into getting real jobs or cutting their hair. Now, while running from the ghosts, the Scooby Gang stumble across Green Lantern and Green Arrow. These guys are just a couple of hard-traveling heroes looking for the spirit of America. And the ghosts succeed in making everyone feel guilty and feel like they should give up. But Fred and Daphne reinvigorate Green Lantern with his lantern and his oath. So Green Lantern and Green Arrow manage to capture the ghosts. Well, Mystery Inc. Reveals by, of course, ripping off the masks, that they weren't really ghosts at all. They're actually the adult children of these aging hipsters. The kids want to bring their parents back to the real world after being away for 50 years. And the parents and the children reconcile with hugs all around. And then suddenly, lots of folks started getting really angry with each other, including Green Arrow and Green Lantern, who end up battling one another. And after then, the Scooby Gang sit there and try and figure out who's causing all this. And they think it might be a villain of the Green Arrow, so they systematically eliminate every one of Green Arrow's foes because he doesn't really have any. And the Scooby Gang end up identifying Psycho Pirate as being the culprit. Green Lantern and Green Arrow subdue Psycho Pirate, and with some help from Black Canary, who arrives on the scene. And the issue ends with Scooby and Shaggy eating a pot of Green Arrow's chili. So I've already professed my love for this one. I got to ask you, what do you think, buddy?
It's amazing to me how much the hard-traveling heroes idea for Green Lantern and Green Arrow has managed to define those characters to a certain generation, when those issues – that was like 10 issues of the series. And then,
that's,
you know,
a good point.
Out of 50 years of Green Lantern comics, that run was like, again, maybe like 15 issues and that was it. But I mean, here they're clearly – Charlie Fish is clearly riffing on the hard-traveling heroes. But that opening scene where Fred is like, happy to be here, Mayor Good Vibes. I've never seen quite a place like Karma Corners before. I'm like, oh, come on. You guys are a bunch of stoners. You're familiar with this. What are you talking about? Who are you guys trying to kid? What's that about?
This thing just – it hit every one of the right buttons for me. The geriatric hippies was hilarious with the straight-laced ghost parents. That was great. Yes, the hard-traveling hero. I mean, that hard-traveling heroes thing, that in and of itself is, what, almost 50 years old, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Those are from the late 60s, those comics.
And yet, I guess we talked about Danny O'Neill recently, and this is just completely riffing on this. I mean, there's a whole reoccurring joke in here where Green Arrow keeps saying, you know, a hideous moral cancer that's rotting our very souls, talking about society, and it keeps being a repeated joke over and over. There's one point where Green Arrow loses it, and he says, you have failed this city, which is a line from the Arrow TV series. He must say it like 5, 6, 7 times. It's hilarious. I'm going to read off another quick bit because this is my favorite part of the issue. They're trying to identify who the bad guy could be, and ultimately they whittle it down to Psycho Pirate. But they're like, They try and name off a bunch of villains. They're like, could it be one of Green Lantern's villains? And they name a bunch. Like, well, they don't control emotions. Who are Green Arrow's bad guys? And they all sit there like a whole panel. They're like, I don't know. Like, maybe Deathstroke? No, he's a Teen Titans villain. Deathshot? No, he's a Batman villain. Ra's al Ghul? Batman again. There has to be someone. And Green Arrow gets pissed off. He's like, I fight tons of villains. Merlin, the Archer, Count Vertigo, Clock King. Which gets a bwahaha out of Hal. Which the whole thing is just hilarious. Just pointing out Green Arrow doesn't have any villains. And all the villains he has, he's basically stolen from everyone else, right? So, oh my gosh.
Props to Sholly Fish for getting the phrase hideous moral cancer into a kid's comic, by the way.
Oh, man. And then, of course, they eat Green Arrow's chili, which is a great hallmark of Green Arrow. But the ending, oh, my God. I mean, there's a gasp-worthy moment at the ending, if you know your stuff, where Green Arrow gets on the back of the motorcycle with Black Canary. They're getting ready to go. And he says, maybe we'll go see what my sidekick Speedy's up to. In knowing the hard-traveling hero's history, you're like, oh, man, that's bad.
Ruh-roh, Rowan.
Oh my gosh, you're terrible. But this was the first one I read. I picked it up kind of on a whim at the comic shop when I saw it on the shelves right after it was published. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll get this. This will be fun. And just the humor in it. Just again, you have failed this city over and over. It is still – I've read this thing probably four times now. It is still so freaking funny to me. I absolutely love it.
There is only one visual gag I wish they had worked into this, and it wouldn't have been keeping with the hard-traveling heroes sort of timey-wimey nature of it, but I just would have enjoyed it, that instead of a motorcycle, I wish Green Arrow had been driving around in the Arrow car that he had that Mego gave him in the mid-70s,
just
that giant Arrow with a suction cup in the front of it. That would have been extra cool. You've been riding around in that cool thing. That would have been awesome. I never had that toy, but it's boss-looking. But yeah, these are, again, this whole series is super charming, and you know, Shag mentioned at the top of the show one of the reasons why we wanted to do this. I also think part of it came from the fact that we've done two memorial shows kind of close together. And while we had fun going through those classic stories by Martin Pasco and Danny O'Neill, it was also a bummer. You know, it's just like a bummer doing those shows. Yeah. And like, we wanted to do something that was just light and cheery and fun. And that immediately came to us was, oh yeah, Scooby-Doo Team Up. Cause this was an amazingly consistent comic. I'm sorry that DC doesn't do it anymore. But I mean, man, they really got they really let Sholly Fish kind of run wild, just trip hammering through the DC universe. And the whole thing is just a real delight.
And remember, guys, you can go out to, again, readdc.com, Comixology, Amazon Kindle, Apple Books, all these different places, and get every issue of Scooby-Doo Team Up for free through September 7th. You got to get these things. And you know what, Rob? I would not be opposed to covering a few more of these on another episode at some point when we've got a week where we can breathe. That would be nice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I jumped immediately for the multi-alien one and the Aquaman one. But there were a lot. I mean, Max could get in on this because Plastic Man was in one of them. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of great, fun characters. And even some of the ones with the other Hanna-Barbera characters. I really right. I loved Hong Kong Phooey and stuff. Like, I loved that cartoon as a kid. So, yeah, there's a ton more to do if we ever wanted to, because it's just Sholly Fish really got a chance to do a lot here, which was, and it's nice to have such a consistent creative team across the entire run of the book.
Yeah,
you know, like absolutely. That's pretty unique. So that it hangs, even though obviously it's just Scooby-Doo Team Up, but it sort of hangs together as like a piece that it's all the same people throughout the whole run, which is really cool. And you mentioned the stock poses and stuff, and yeah, there is some of that, but boy, it is hard. Really hard to draw the characters on model like that. We've all seen characters drawn off model, and they're immediately very discordant. Where you're like, it doesn't quite look like, you know, like that Homer doesn't look like the Homer Simpson I know. But I mean, man, Dario Bruziella nails the Scooby characters exactly. Every panel, they look just like the Hanna-Barbera version.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect. It's wonderful. Such a joy. All right, well, we could go on and on about this. Bottom line is we love it, and you know what? It brought us a lot of joy, and that's what matters. And I have no doubt it'll bring joy to you guys at home because you love these DC heroes. So it's right up your alley. So, Rob, we're going to put up a couple of images on the gallery. Why don't you tell people where they can find that?
That's at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Yep. Go out there to the show post as well. I would love to hear your thoughts. Maybe tell us some of your favorite issues, or maybe, you know, again, there's 250 free Scooby-Doo comics right now, guys. So that, again, includes regular Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo Where Are You? Maybe you could recommend some good issues of those as well, because I haven't dug into those yet. So that could be a lot of fun hearing what those are. And then check us out, you know, of course, FW Podcast on Twitter and FireAndWaterPodcast.com, Fire and Water Podcast on Facebook. I think that's going to do it. So, folks, until next time, remember, we would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for those meddling kids.
It's Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin? What are you doing here?